You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey there, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name's Clint Clifton, and today I'm joined with Jess Thompson and Todd Adkins.
Welcome.
Yes, he's the director of leadership over at Lifeway Christian Resources. And before Todd went to Lifeway.
Oh, you don't need any of that stuff. Just
any of what stuff?
Any of the rest of bio-ness.
But how are we going to know
some stuff for Lifeway and let's go.
How are we going to know how credible you are?
But old time listeners know. Because they've been around for a while and they experienced the
Let him do his job, Todd. Let him do his thing.
Fine. I'm not going to finish it. Jess, though. Jess.
I'd like you to tell my whole thing.
Jess has done a lot of things. She's the director of operations for New City Church Planting, which is a church planting network based in the Washington, D.C. area. And Jess served for 13 years on various staff roles at McLean Bible Church, where she and Todd worked together. And she helps church planting families in the greater capital region have fruitful and healthy family relationships and whatnot as they're planting new churches. She's also married to Lee, and they have two high-spirited young boys. Welcome, the two of you.
Quote, unquote, wild. It should be wild.
Wild young boys, yeah. So I'm excited to have this conversation. There are there's this subtle undercurrent in the church world that growth is at the end of the day kind of the goal. And even if we you know, say verbally, it's really not the goal to grow. Growth isn't really the goal. There is sort of this subtle pressure for our churches to always be numerically larger and larger and larger. And so I think that there are some advantages to staying relatively small. Now, we want to continue to reach people with the gospel. We don't want to, you know, ever be settled. I think of this Spurgeon quote that says he's going to continue to work hard until the parameters of the church are commensurate with the parameters of the world. So he's going to continue to advance the gospel until the whole world's been reached. However, there are some advantages to your local church being modest in size, and I want to talk about some of those advantages today. So I've come up with five advantages, I think. So I'm going to throw them out there, and I want to hear your opinions about it, if you disagree or if you agree. So I'll talk about the first one. The first one is agility in mission. And what I mean by this is when you are relatively small, you can move quickly in mission. Let me, an example that I have of this is that about a year ago, we had 13,000 Afghan refugees dropped into our community. And we made the decision within a day to hire a full-time staff member to focus on that and to basically stop everything we were planning to do for the rest of the year, the rest of the semester, in order to focus a bunch of our attention on serving these Afghan refugees. It was just a unique season, a unique opportunity, and we were able to pivot really quickly. Now, I can imagine if the church were much bigger, we might not have been able to do that. So agility and mission, what do you guys think about that?
I mean, yes. The advantage of staying small is numerous. I mean, one, you know, you always hear the speedboat versus freightliner analogy. Freightliner, you know, most churches would be like, oh, I'm not a freightliner. Then use yacht. I don't care. The point is, one is easier to maneuver than the other. And because it comes back to communication, I think for those of you that have read Team of Teams or McChrystal, you know that, you know, the way our military now works versus how it used to work is in smaller teams. You know, when you have six people versus a dozen people or even, you know, 20 people or 200 people, the lines of communication increase exponentially. It doesn't seem like it, but the more people you add to a group, the greater complexity that there is in that group. So yeah, that's the big thing. And I that's where I would want to camp out when we get to that point, is on the size of groups and what different groups are for and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Jess, you've been working for years at a really large church, and you've seen maybe some of the difficulties of pivoting quickly. What's this make you think? You worked with small church plants, and you've worked with really large churches. What do you think when it comes to agility and mission?
Yeah, I think you're right on. Obviously, you can turn faster. You can focus on other things faster. I think some things at a big church, they have more resources to put into something, to an initiative. So sometimes there's maybe a bigger bang for your buck in terms of a large church. But also I think in large churches, there's this hesitancy towards change or towards doing something new. There's kind of the people who are like, well, it's always been this way. This is how it should always be. And so anytime we do something new at a large church, there's just a camp of people who are like, why are we doing this? This isn't how it's always been. And so I think it's harder to pivot into try new things when there's just a hesitancy towards anything that's different.
Right. And sometimes that kind of leads to the second point. Sometimes in a situation where the lines of decision-making or authority are very clear, but they're not very relational, it becomes a lot harder to do something sort of outside the box or unique. So that my second point is relational depth. One of the advantages to being a small church is that you have most often a lot of relational depth with the people that you're doing ministry with. And so you tend to settle on an ethos, a thing that is sort of the culture of the organization that allows you, you know, using my Afghan refugee that I just referenced a few minutes ago, the ethos being so similar and our relationships being so deep made the key decision makers know right away, this is right. This is a golden opportunity, an opportunity we're not going to be given many times in the future. And we all agreed unanimously and quickly, we need to move on this. And I think a lot of that had to do with the relational depth and the shared ethos that we have with one another. Todd, what do you think about culture?
It's interesting that you almost went to a anthropological answer with, you know, you're thinking of refugees, you're thinking of different groups of people, because there's this thing called Dunbar's number. And so when you look at Facebook or you look at LinkedIn or you looked at different things, there's some of these numbers that are going to sound really familiar. Or you look at the Bible, or you look at the way church does groups or whatever. So Dunbar's number is 150, which is your tribe. That's like the maximum number that people that you can maintain a relationship with, supposedly, from a scientific standpoint. That's the middle number, though. It actually goes back down to 5 people is your support group. Then you have your sympathy group. That's like 12 to 15 people. Sounds like a small group, right? Then you have 50 is the next big thing. And that's like your clan or your family. So when you look at the size of our churches, a lot of times you're going to see that 50-ish, 60-ish number, and you're going to see the 150 number. Now, when you get beyond the 150, you're getting to acquaintances. To 500 is acquaintances, and that's people that you kind of know and can have a conversation with and catch up with. And then finally, you have a 1500 number, and that is your cognitive ability to recognize a face with a name.
Yeah.
Somebody that you've met before, that kind of thing. So when you look at churches, it actually makes sense that churches begin to max out at 150. Mm-hmm. And we have all kinds of people, you know, talking about breaking the 200 barrier and all right. these different things, because that's about the number of people that we can, you know, be in a tribe and a real relationship with, where we can kind of trust that person.
Yeah.
The smaller you get, the more intimate you get. So, you know, the support group, you can tell anything. The sympathy group, that 12 to 15 is who you can call in an emergency and they'll, you know, show up. And then you get to your clan and so on and so forth. But Dunbar's number, if you look that up and just do some reading on it, I think you would find it speaks a lot to why at least scientifically, you should keep stuff small.
Yeah.
When we look at scripture, you can see the 3, the 12, the 70, and so on and so forth.
Mm. I think the relational depth is just the biggest, you know, bonus for small churches. I mean, that's what we want spiritually. We want to be known. We want to be known by our Creator. We want to be known by each other. And I think in large churches, that's hard to do. And funny for me personally, for me, I've always been, even growing up, my Burke Community Church was pretty big, you know, not, yeah. It was over 150. So I've always been a part of large churches. And for me, I was able to kind of find my niches in those. But now with my kiddos, I took my oldest to a youth group, and there was probably like 100 kids in that room. And I was like, this is too big. You know, I want him to feel, you know, have a smaller group that he can connect with. So I think that being known and feeling like people recognize when you're not there and that you are a part of the church, not just going to church, you know, that you are a body of believers and you are the church, that feels so much more real and live than when you go to these big churches.
I got one more thing to say. One more thing to say. And that would be when you look at an organization, so people know John Cotter from writing books like Leading Change, but there's a book that he wrote not too long ago that wasn't terribly successful. And probably because it should have been a blog post, but it's called Accelerate, X, L, and then R8. Like, it wasn't a great title. It's not a great cover, but
you're really pumping this up.
One of the things that he talked about was that organizations start relational and nodal, and then they move to hierarchical. So it moves from looking like, you know, a centerpiece and nodes representing relationships to something that looks like a pyramid. The reason why we do that as churches and organizations as we grow is centralization is a response to risk, perceived risk and fear, and really control. And so church plants start out really relational. And as we get more successful, there's more at stake. And so we start to tend to try to control it more and more, hire more people, you know, all of the things. And what happens is legacy churches and legacy organizations tend to have their lunch eaten by the upstarts who are more nodal, who are more networking, who are more relational. You see that in business. And I honestly think you see that in churches as well.
So the secret sauce would be to stay relational and grow the same
time. It's to have both. And he gives a model in that book for both.
Yeah. Well, you remind me of a fascinating book that I read years ago called Barbarians to Bureaucrats. Lawrence Miller is the author.
Yeah.
It's a very similar idea, that the idea that as organizations mature, they go from barbarians to bureaucrats. And so the thing about small, nimble organizations is they're both willing and able to do more quicker, and they everything's a little easier because it runs on the rails of relationships instead of just on the rails of like lines of authority. And so sometimes, I mean, Jess mentioned earlier, sometimes a large church has the advantage of having a robust budget, or maybe a lot of resources that are just their disposal. But in my experience, you know, having been a person who's worked in a resource rich environment, a resource poor environment, the kind of heart and soul that comes with being a part of a small, you know, fully aligned group of people that are zealously, you know, pursuing the same goals is much, much more invigorating and exciting. And actually much more progress is made in a situation like that, from my point of view, than being in a scenario where there's a lot of resources. And I think most of us recognize that we really do want to be a part of something that is, that's really meaningful in that way. So we talked about agility and mission. We talked about relational depth. Next, forced ingenuity. And this is kind of interacts with the resource richness thing, but forced ingenuity, I just mean by that, I mean, you have so many barriers when you're a small church. I just think we're in, Todd, you're in Nashville area. We live in the Washington, D.C. area. And when you think about starting a church in our communities, oh my goodness. I mean, the number of obstacles that are in front of you are just sometimes overwhelming. So basically you know, you can say, and I've said this to church planners before, it'll be a miracle if your church gets rooted here and lasts for 20 or 30 or 40 years. I mean, because the odds are so stacked against you in so many ways. Economically, they're stacked against you. You know, transiency is huge where we are. People are coming in and out all the time. The society is not friendly to new churches. You know, most communities would rather see another 7-Eleven or something like that than to see another new church. Most communities. So it's just not something that's very welcome. There's no welcome wagon going to show up and be glad that you're there. There's no, you know, group of civic leaders that are going to, you know, be really excited that your new church is in the community in most of our major urban centers, especially in the frontier areas of the country. So because of that, if you're going to be successful, you have this big stack of odds against you. You have to be really, really, you have to have a lot of ingenuity. And so forced ingenuity, you know, kind of put in a place where the puzzle is really difficult to solve. And so you've got to get really creative and pay a lot of attention in the way you're going to solve it.
Yeah, I think the more, the smaller you are, the easier it is to be focused and have clear decision rights.
Yeah.
So what happens as you grow and as you have that hierarchy form, then you start to develop policies and you start to develop systems to run people through in order to make a decision. Yeah. But if you're clear, really crystal clear on your vision, what you're about, your values, and what those are, then it's easy to have decision rights and it's easier to be innovative. Mm-hmm. So churches, unfortunately, the larger you get and the more established you get, you tend to be innovative where you should be static and static where you should be innovative.
Right.
But the smallness of it allows you to really say, oh, I can take initiative here and do so in a way that's directionally correct and be confident in that because we're all clear and because we're all together. So it's easier to take that risk of saying, you know what? I'm going to join the Chamber of Commerce. I know that that's not in a book somewhere, but I'm going to join it because I know that by joining the Chamber of Commerce, I'm going to get to know some of the business owners. I'm going to get to know if I'm going to have egress issues or if I'm going to have anything down the road. I'm going to figure that out. That was one of the things that I ended up doing early on and I've done ever since because it worked in a small place and then it began to work in a large place as well.
Yeah, great point.
I think too, you see church planters generally just being more entrepreneurial. Mouth isn't formulating that word right now. So they're just, I think, better at starting things and not being afraid to try and seeing things differently and being able to solve puzzles. I think that church planting tends to just attract those type of people who can kind of see that way. So
totally true.
I think that's a benefit.
I've said this before about church planters. Church planters, just think about the kind of mindset that would cause a person to think, hey, I can plant a church in New York City or I can plant a church in Washington, D.C. I mean, you've got to be a little bit half-witted already. Like you have to have a lot of confidence in God's ability to do something through you in the most positive terms, you know?
Right.
The church planters are generally very optimistic and hopeful, which is why church planting is so hard because their expectations are that they're going to do pretty well. And then they face some of the realities. And so some of the difficulty of church planting is just grappling with those realities and trying to press through those difficult seasons. So forced ingenuity. Okay. Two more. Inconsequential failure. This one I think is one of the best advantages of being small is that, you know, if I fail, there's not much to lose, you know, I mean, and there's something about the organization growing bigger and bigger. The church I planted is 18 years old now. And, you know, a big scheme of things compared to other churches, Todd, you work for Lifeway, Jess, you're associated with McLean Bible, really big organizations and organizations that, man, if they have a big failure on their hands, it's tough. It's tough to recover from. There's a big shockwave that comes from that. You know, even in my context now, if we go all in on something and it doesn't pan out, it's not the end of our organization. And it doesn't have the kind of shockwaves. And it's
funny. I would almost see it as the opposite, but I, no, you you have the expertise in that, but it would almost seem like a big church can kind of absorb some failures. Like if I totally mess up this ministry that I'm a part of, I mean, it's small in comparison to what the whole church is doing. So it would seem the opposite to me.
Yeah, I understand. It kind of like, it's sort of the naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I'll return thing too. Like, I mean, when you go out there to start a church, there's not a church there anyway. You know, like the worst thing that happens is there's still not a church there. I mean, when there's a church there that's been there and it's rooted for a long time, and I do something that's caused a huge problem in the life of the church, are going to cause, you know, have a lot of shockwaves, ramifications in the church. It could, you know, it just the leaders feel the weight of that responsibility a lot as the church grows and gains more responsibility. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Any more thoughts about that?
No, I think that one, you know, again, growth tends to lead to centralization, which is a response to perceived risk, fear. So, I think that one's that one's great.
And efficiency. I think part of it too is like organizations, as they grow, they want the advantage they have is they can potentially do things more efficiently, and if they pull it all together. And that's like the whole central ops idea, you know, instead of everybody being responsible for all of their stuff, we're going to get one set of experts who does it more efficiently.
I think there's actually an illusion of efficiency there, but that's for a whole other podcast that we can have some.
No, I agree with you about that. There's actually, and this is not a point we put in here, but it's counterintuitive to force or create an environment where people are having to learn a lot of things, because in an environment where they have to learn a lot of different skill sets, they don't become great at any of them. But the advantage is, if you look at the other, flip the coin on the other side, the advantage is they become well-versed at a lot of things. So let me give you an example. Like when working with a large mega church about a church planting, this large church wants to plant churches. They have a hard time planting churches though, because everybody on their staff or their team does this really specialized job. They're like the middle school volunteer pastor or something like that. You know, they do this really, really ultra specialized job. So they don't get the skill set breadth that you would get if you worked in a really small environment where you kind of had to learn to do the projection on Sundays, and you had to learn to, you know, do the finances, and you had to learn to, you know, relate to a worship leader and lead a staff meeting and rent a facility and all that stuff. In a large environment, lots of people, you know, have kind of niche responsibilities for those things. And so I think it's actually another advantage of a small environment that you get a breadth of learning. Yeah.
There is it's actually a Shakespeare quote that is often cut short, which is the jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of none. And so I think that's important as well, to remember that as long as you're in a developmental mindset and a growth mindset, then your people can grow with you. Like whoever's with you in the beginning should be learning and growing. Sure, they may end up specializing in something later on, but that posture of doing whatever it takes, that posture of learning, I think serves them and serves your church well long term.
Yeah, really does. And it, you know, there's something about becoming like an expert at something that makes you feel a bit entitled. And that's not a posture of heart that's really helpful for gospel ministry. You know, when we are sort of an all hands on deck organization, like a small church plant is, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to help my brothers and sisters be successful in their particular roles that they have, because we all depend, we're like interdependent together on the success of this thing. And I can't look over at somebody and say, hey, you didn't do that one thing right, and sort of you failed the organization. We're all, the whole organization rises and falls on our ability to lean into each other. So, and that takes us to our last one, volunteer dependency. I think it's, you know, in a resource-rich environment, a large church environment, we go to really quickly, let's hire somebody to do this. In fact, you know, almost, I mean, you guys have both worked in environments like this where almost every problem, the answer, the solution to the problem is a new staff member or a new consultant or a reallocation of a current staff member. And that's just not the case in a church planning environment. We know that's off the table. It's out of bounds. We don't even have it as an option, so that we don't even consider that option. What do you guys think?
I mean, I think it depends. Yes, obviously, 100%. And the volunteer dependency, it's like, well, if we don't have ushers or people passing out the offering, we're not going to collect an offering. It won't happen. You know, yeah. I think in large churches, if you don't have enough volunteers to do something, you can kind of like pull people and sort of, you know, make it work. So I can totally see that. But I do feel like there is sometimes just a culture of volunteering and that large churches can have. I know we've had different seasons of ministry where that has been more the case or not. But I think what you were just talking about, the whole team working together, you know, sometimes in big churches, you get siloed in your area. Like, well, I'm good. I got all my volunteers. We're doing great over here. And sorry, you can't find any, you know, Bible study leaders. Like, there's a sense of like, well, that's, you know, but I think what you were speaking about the whole church serving together, all it's not just volunteers for the Sunday morning stuff. It's volunteers for groups. So I think you have more synergy in that we're all in this trying to make it together than you do in large churches.
Yeah.
Might need to do an opposite podcast. What are the advantages of being a big church? Yeah. I don't know. I feel like we've just said.
Well, the thing about that is there's no big churches listening to this podcast.
So. Hey, I'm telling you, a lot of the places I go, people mention new churches more than they mention 5LQ. So, and 5LQ supposedly has more listeners, which means that the people that listen to this podcast are faithful and true. And
well, I think the people that listen to this podcast are desperate. You know, I mean, I don't mean that to be rude. I mean, there is a sense of desperation when you're planting a church. Like it's the old, like, I remember my Spanish teacher in high school saying, and I was like, when am I ever going to use this? You know? And she said, I don't know, but you'll know when there'll be a day where you'll go, I wish I'd have paid attention in Spanish class. And I can't tell you the number of times I've said, I wish I'd have paid attention in Spanish class, you know, but I couldn't have conceived it when I was. And so there's something about being a church planter that makes you go like, man, I actually need this information. I can't do it without it. So I think that's some of it. Jess and Todd, incredible. Thank you so much for this great conversation. I appreciate you. And if you're out there and you're pastoring a small congregation and you meet in an out of the way place and it doesn't seem like you're very substantial or the work you do is very consequential, hear me. You've got some real advantages in the situation that you're in. And the work that you're doing is good and godly. And remember, what you're doing as an act of worship. You're not doing because you're fruitful necessarily. You're doing it because you're faithful. So the work you're doing is significant and important. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.
I'm Trevin Wax, and I have a new podcast called Reconstructing Faith. In it, we address the church's credibility crisis, reflecting on the challenges of today while learning from church history and the church around the world. Look for it wherever you get your podcasts.